Welcome to the ACO Show, a podcast about the American healthcare system and some people who are trying to make it better. I am joined today by Farzad Mostashari, who is the CEO of Aledade, along with my co-host, John Kavanaugh, who's the perfect host for this interview. He's the former director for the Center of Medicare. Now, what we're going to be talking about today is a paper put out by some of the leaders at CMS called The Update on the Medicare Value-Based Care Strategy, Alignment, Growth, and Equity, put out by some authors, including Doug Jacobs, Liz Fowler, Mina Seshamani, and others. So why don't I hand it off to you, Sean?
Thanks, Josh. It's good to be here. The first thing I wanted to call out is you started to name some of the authors of the blog. What you have is the leadership of the Center for Medicare, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, and the Center for Clinical Standards and Quality at CMS. And I have to give CMS a lot of credit. They've done a lot of this cross-center issuing of strategy papers that are often followed by a request for information around a very specific policy topic, which inevitably seem to be followed by either a new innovation center model or a regulation in another program like the Medicare Shared Savings Program. They've established this cadence of transparency and public input that I think is really admirable. And we've seen pieces of this from CMS before, but never the full and disciplined way.
Yeah. It's funny. I when I used to be the National Coordinator for Health IT, people used to always think that they have to get some lobbyist to come in and talk to us to understand what we're thinking. And I would always say, like, I'm trying to tell you what we're thinking. Did you see the the piece we wrote? And like, no one had ever read the piece we wrote. So I feel a lot of sympathy for people on the policymaking side who are like, yeah, we're trying to tell you. There's no secret here. We're trying to tell you what we're interested in doing. And I think that careful read, and that's what we're going to be doing today, is a careful read of what they have said is, I think, a good indicator of where the program's headed.
That's a great point, Farzad, because the first word in the title of the piece was update. This is not their strategy. This is an update on a strategy that they've articulated before and they've followed through before. What they did was they identified three major areas that they've talked about before: alignment, growth, and equity. And I want to go through each of these and we'll talk about pieces of them and figure out what we think about them.
I have a game, Sean. How about this? How about one of us will say, like, maybe we'll have you play the role of the CMS person and you will say, what do we like about what they said? What is it that makes total sense? And we think from a policy point of view, from the field, right? Like, we are living this every day. Largest value-based enabler in the country, most successful, if I do say so myself. And what is it that when we look at this, how do we interpret this? And then you ask me to say, where would we go from there? Like, what suggestions do we have for making it even better? Does that make sense?
That makes sense, because that's the role I instinctively play when I read these things. I have so much empathy for folks who are at CMS. So I'll start with alignment, which is, and their biggest accomplishment or undertaking, let me say, is this universal foundation of quality measures. It's been this elusive goal for a long time at CMS, which is, how do we get some similar quality measures across all these different programs, value-based programs and pay for performance, so that we can compare performance across them and hopefully more meaningful measures. And I know many administrations have worked at this and made some incremental progress, but this seems to be the boldest undertaking so far. So I tip my hat to them, and I think they're doing great work there. But what would you do different, or is that, or what would you do more? Or
I'm actually going to ask Josh Israel to weigh in here, because he, in fact, deals with the quality measures every day.
Yeah, I'm mostly going to stay out of you two experts' way here. But on this one, it is certainly a great start to have an aligned set of measures. But in many ways, we already de facto have an aligned set of measures. You know, most contracts have blood pressure, hemoglobin, breast cancer screening, et cetera. What we need is parsimony. What we need is fewer measures. And when they put it out as foundation, I thought at first that was going to mean these are the measures. But it is sounding like they mean this is the foundation upon which we're going to stack another edifice. And that is what we don't need. So I really hope that they will move this in the direction of a constrained set of measures, not just a basic set on which many programs and many payers stack other measures.
100%. Couldn't have said it better myself. The other thing I'll say is the most parsimonious quality program we have is right now Medicare Shared Savings Program, where we're headed towards having literally three clinical measures, three: blood pressure, A1C, and depression screening. So the idea, and like we can quibble about that, but the idea, those that makes a ton of sense to me. How do you save the most lives and reduce the greatest disparities in deaths? That's blood pressure control. How do we save the most limbs and eyes? That's diabetes control. And how do we address the biggest disparities in and the biggest impact on quality of life? And that's depression. That makes a ton of sense to me. The idea that we would add more measures to the Medicare Shared Savings Program, for example, to me is not moving in the right direction. I hope that's not where we're going. Okay.
You know, I'll make a small pitch for a related item, which is something we've been working on here at Aledade, which is in the Medicare Advantage program, they have process measures on medication adherence, because for many years we knew getting beneficiaries to take the proper meds at the right time was good for them. But we now have outcomes measures for some of those same conditions, hypertension, diabetes. But in the Medicare Advantage STAR measures, we still have both sets of measures, both the process measures and the outcomes measures. And we recently wrote a piece calling on CMS to, in the interest of parsimony and interest of measuring more meaningful things, to drop the process measures and stick with the outcomes measures.
Sean, you were supposed to be on the side of only being supportive. I you just slipped that in there.
I have to say, I bit my tongue in the earlier part. I was like, there's no making you guys happy.
All right, let's shift to growth. What do you like, Sean, about the CMS strategy on growing accountable care?
Well, first of all, that they've set a goal, and the goal was articulated, as I said, in the earlier strategy, not in this update. But they have a goal of getting 100% of traditional Medicare beneficiaries in an accountable care relationship. And they gave a date to by 2030. And I love that they put that out there very purposefully, holding themselves accountable. And then they've tried to follow it up with very specific policy measures that they think will increase participation in the program. Things like the Advanced Investment Program, which is an expansion of a CMMI model. Most recently, they got rid of, there was a regional efficiency adjustment to benchmarks in the Medicare Shared Savings Program, that if you were actually high cost was a disincentive to ever getting in the program. So I like the fact that they've stuck with this through multiple strategy documents. They're holding themselves accountable and they're trying to back it up with real policy proposals. But what would you add to their list of things, Farza?
I agree. And I really do want to laud not only their making that goal, but also being really clear in this paper about the why, that they are seeing better quality of care for patients in the program. They are seeing better coordination of care. They are seeing lower cost in the program. So it makes good sense, right? Like, this is the only way, as you've pointed out, you're not giving beneficiaries less, you're giving them more. You're not cutting pay to doctors. No one likes to do that. Primary care is getting paid more, and you're reducing costs for the taxpayer. So all good. What would we do differently? Look, part of, I was reflecting recently on my time, the 20th anniversary of the ONC is coming up, and I was there during a critical five-year period from 2009 to 2014, where adoption of electronic health records went from basically nobody to basically everybody, from 9% to 90% of hospitals. And look, the incentives, I was looking back and it was like, oh, it was $44,000 over like 5 years. So it's like $8,000 to completely change the way you've practiced medicine your whole career from paper and pen to an electronic health record. The incentives weren't that huge. And people often think that it was a mandate, like we forced. No, it wasn't a mandate. There was a little bit of money, right? But we created a sense of inevitability. And we created simplicity, like this is, there's one program, it's meaningful use. And we created a set of helpers, the regional extension centers. And I think that is the lesson that I would draw. I think it is actually completely doable for in the next 5-6 years to get to 80-90% in accountable care, but the person you got to sell it to, and you got to sell it, is the docs, right? You got to sell it to the practices. This isn't like patients don't choose to be in accountable care. Their primary care providers do. And in order to do that, in order to get the mainstream, not the early adopters, not the first 20, 30%, but to get the next 30 to 40 to 50%, the mainstream docs in, you got to make it simple. You got to say, this is the way, this is the only way, this is where everything is headed. And you got to actually support the people, the enablers who are going to make it easier for them to do this and put the whole package together. So I think that there is actually, and I'm going to now praise CMS, the Flex program built on the chassis of the Medicare Shared Savings Program. That is something we've been advocating for a long time. As you said, they signaled it in an earlier paper. What that means is they're saying, if we're going to do innovation, it doesn't have to be a new model. We don't need new bells and whistles. We don't need 12 new models. We can test this one feature, primary care capitated payments, in the context of where we're telling everyone, go there, Medicare Shared Savings Program. That's a permanent program. It's not a test. It's not an experiment. It's not a pilot. It's not a model. It is a way, permanent way in the Medicare program to do value-based care. That's where we want most docs to go. And if we want to test certain things, we can do it within that construct. So I think the idea of really prioritizing MSSP as a chassis, and if we want to test new models, we can do it within there. And if we want to add new tracks, we can do it there as well. I think that's a really positive direction. But I would just urge our friends there to lean into the simplicity and the, you know, saying like, look, the inevitability of this, and make it clear, like, this is the way, and we really want doctors to move to the Medicare Shared Savings Program. Just say it.
Yeah, there's a lot to the bully pulpit of CMS. I think, I'm not even sure if I fully realized it when I was there, but as people have reminded me, some people pay more attention to what CMS says, as much attention to what CMS says as to what they do. But you raised something else I wanted to compliment CMS for. I was there in the early days of the ACO reg writing, and we always knew there were really two problems that would have to be solved over time. One, you already put your finger on, which is ACOs don't have great cash flow. They got to wait 18 months. And to their enormous credit, CMS has proposed a model where under Flex, they'll get capitated payments during the year. There's a lot of great things ACOs can do with that. The other one is, you know, with rebasing and ratcheting or the resetting of benchmarks periodically, we were worried whether there was a long-term business case and really strong incentives, not just for ACOs to participate, but to continue driving improvement over the long run. And, you know, to their credit, 2 years ago, they addressed this head on. They had a request for information on what they called administrative benchmarking. It gets fairly technical, but essentially a thesis of how to get around rebasing by and allowing the program so that it wasn't a zero-sum game.
Just to interrupt there, Sean, you said rebasing, and I think maybe just to explain to folks that the core problem here that you're pointing to is if after you get savings, you reduce cost of care, your benchmark comes down, that limits, right, the sustainability of the program because people could be working hard and working really hard to maintain low costs. But then if too much of that gets taken away, then that could kill the incentives to stay in the program and to really enter the program in the first place or grow the program or invest in the program if people see limited upside over the long run.
Yeah, exactly. And what I wanted to tip my hat to them for is they came up with a proposal called administrative benchmarking. And they started down this pathway that we talked about. They did a request for information. We all sent our ideas in. They've made some incremental steps in that direction. There's probably more to be done. But I think if they're going to grow the program in the long run, they've started down the right path with this. But as you always, I think, would have some ideas on how they could go further.
Yeah. So I think if you want to do that, then one thing we could do is there's a limit on regional efficiency. So if you are, the program rewards you for being better than everyone else around you. And so there's an attainment and an improvement component. But when you get rebased, they kind of cap the amount of improvement that you've already attained forward at 5% regional efficiency. I think that number should probably be higher and allow people, if they have earned it, only if they've earned it, if they've created efficiency, to carry forward the efficiency that they have earned forward. And I think that creates a lot more incentive for investments and sustainability of this model.
We're getting into fairly technical benchmarking, but I think you're right. The principle being, the longer you're in the program, the greater the return should be allowed to be. And I think what that would allow us all to do is some of the things CMS has been asking us to do. There's been a big push from CMS. They want us to get more into behavioral health. They want to see more specialty integration into ACO models, signaling very strongly that they'd like us to start addressing social determinants of health. And to their credit, they're paying for the collection of some of that social data. But I think, you know, the pie of savings has to grow in order for us to bring more providers in the tent and tackle more problems.
Yeah. Let me ask you, the point you raised about this paper was written by folks both at the Center for Medicare, which is the permanent program you used to lead, and then the Innovation Center, where you used to be deputy there, which is charged with coming up with new models. We have seen some increase, a couple million Medicare beneficiaries that came into the program through direct contracting, now ACO REACH. And the question is, what's going to happen to those ACOs, basically? They're it's a model, it's a five-year model. And you were there, I think, when there was a similar sort of transition, phase transition that you were thinking has to happen, with one program evolving into the either into a new program, a new model, or being rolled into the permanent program. Talk a little bit about what you think CMS should do or could do or would do as this ACO REACH program reaches a conclusion.
Yeah, well, I think what you're alluding to is we at the Innovation Center in the early years, we had something called the Pioneer ACO model. And implicitly, we always thought if we were doing something different in Pioneer that was successful, then it would gravitate over to the Medicare Shared Savings Program at some point. And that's exactly what happened, you know, with trying different attribution methodologies, higher risk tracks. They're now permanent parts of the MSSP. And the same with what used to be called Track 1 Plus, which is limiting downside risk for certain types of ACOs. So I think ideally that's what should happen with the ACO REACH model. The evaluation should tell us what worked best, including what the ACOs themselves found most valuable as the tools that CMS provided them and the payments to improve care. And they should be brought over into the Medicare Shared Savings Program. New tracks, new options. There's a lot of different ways to do it. But as I tell people, you know, colleagues of mine, the best case scenario for ACO REACH is that it become permanent in some form in the MSSP program.
Moving on to equity, that was actually one of the features of REACH also. What was added to REACH was implementing a benchmark that incentivized creating ACOs in poorer communities. Talk to me about the equity agenda here and what you wanna call out and praise CMS for.
Yeah, well, when the Biden administration came in, they made equity across many of the programs, not just healthcare programs, a top priority. And I was really curious to see how much they followed through. And to their credit, they've been relentless in healthcare in pursuing an equity agenda. As you said, one of the things they called out in the Medicare Shared Savings Program, they did an examination of who was in the Medicare Shared Savings Program. And they said, hey, guys, you're not treating underserved areas in the Medicare Shared Savings Program to the degree that we have underserved areas in the Medicare. Go ahead, sorry.
I just want to say, when you say you guys, it would not be appropriate to include Aledade amongst that use guys, because we actually at Aledade do. We include 60% of our lives are from health professional shortage areas.
That's so true. Like our practices are in some of the most underserved areas. But CMS was concerned that wasn't true across the whole program. So not everybody was Aledade. And they've put their money where their mouth is. They're testing benchmarking methodologies to see if they can incentivize folks to move to those areas. They're tweaking quality adjustments to reward improvement on treatment of the underserved communities. So I really give them a lot of credit for not just talking the rhetoric of health equity, but coming up with policy proposals to further it. So
yeah,
far as that,
absolutely.
Where could they have done more?
Look, I think that collecting information about disparities is good. One thing I would love to see, I motioned to this earlier, is also really concrete focus on what could save the most lives or reduce the disparity in deaths the most, which is blood pressure control. And I would just love to see, I don't know, just like a triple frickin' weight on blood pressure control in the African American population, which would have such a huge impact, and just like aligning incentives more towards that, not just collecting the data, but really incentivizing everybody to address this national tragedy, which is just the strokes and heart attacks that are unnecessary and preventable. And we know what to do. And we just really need to double down on investments on those, and including in the federally qualified health centers. We're proud to serve a significant portion of the federally qualified health centers in this country in value-based care. And I would just love to see more alignment with that very crystal clear goal around reducing out of control blood pressure in the African-American community.
Yeah, and that's one highly impactful area you identified. But CMS has seen MA plans get increasingly offering supplemental benefits, what they call special supplemental benefits for chronically ill. Food,
and it's work, right?
Housing.
And we have seen greater enrollment of minority and disadvantaged populations in Medicare Advantage versus traditional Medicare from not just the $0 premium and the Part D plan coverage, but also some of these supplemental benefits. So it's true that there is that. But do you worry, Sean, as someone who used to be, you know, thinking about the accountability for that program in terms of like, what are these supplemental benefits being spent on exactly?
Yeah, I think CMS is starting to have the question too, or at least who are they being spent on and how much are they being used? And again, to CMS's credit, they're going to ramp up the data collection in that area. But I sense a concern in your voice. What are you worried about? These sound like good things. What's bad about giving people food?
Well, so look, if you know, food is medicine, sure. But if we get into these bidding wars, and it really is bidding on the part of the different health plans, to say, I'll give you a $30 grocery, you know, $30 a month in grocery cash card. No, I'll give you $50. No, I'll give you $80, right? I don't think CMS knows what that money is being spent on. Like, is it being spent on like healthy fruits and vegetables? Or is it being spent on, I don't know. So I question whether in truth, particularly the cash benefits, should be classified as medical expense, or are they really marketing expenses to win members? And it's fine for it to be marketing expense. It's just, it goes into a different part of the calculation. It should not be part of the medical loss ratio that gets downstreamed to risk-taking providers, in my view.
Yeah. I think we, both Allidade, but also CMS and the community at large, had a lot to learn about what services you can provide that truly are health enhancing and what serves some other purpose. And hopefully the CMS data collection will shine a bright light in that area.
So we've given a lot of suggestions for our friends, but I do want to come back to where we started at the beginning, which is just gratitude that we have such thoughtful servants, civil servants in the federal government who are trying to do every day the right thing. And I felt privileged to have been able to spend some time there, Sean. You did as well. Any parting words here?
Well, you said it at the beginning of this show, which is, I'm trying to tell you what's going to happen. And I think CMS has been trying to tell us what's going to happen. And if I'm reading the tea leaves right, I think there's more stuff coming this year. maybe in the Medicare fee schedule reg, which comes out late June, early July. So I'm excited. I think the pace has really picked up and their commitment is unwavering.
Thank you both. That's a wrap.
The ACO Show now has a mailbag. Submit your questions or episode ideas to acoshow@alladay.com. This show was produced by Leanne Horst, Alana Coogan, Rebecca Raymond, and Stuart Taylor. Check out more of our show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.